How you start matters. This is true in a variety of venues, not just here. Many of you know that I grew up around amateur motorsport. There was always at least one race car in the driveway. And most of what we did was autocrossing. We would do the occasional track day, maybe a hill climb, something like that. But most of it was autocrossing. If you don't know what autocrossing is, autocrossing is where you take the biggest piece of pavement you can find, maybe an abandoned airport runway or just one that's not used very much, a big mall parking lot, something like that, a lot of pavement. Cones are set up, fastest person through the course, different course every Sunday is the winner in their particular class. It's a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And you can always tell who the newbies are, because they'll come up to the line in their fancy, whatever it is, sports car that they've recently gotten. They are excited. They are about to go racing, right? And the timer counts down to whatever it is. Maybe a light turns green so they know to go. And immediately, they drop the clutch and the rear tires, usually or front tires, whatever, go up in a cloud of smoke, okay? That's how you know that this person does not know how to race, okay? Because actually the fastest way to take off, the fastest way to excel, you didn't know you were going to get tips on driving this morning, performance driving, but this is true. The fastest way, experts tell us, is about 20% tire slip. Okay, 20% tire slip, that will give you maximum traction off the line. And the guys that are out there just smoking them are just showing they've been watching too much late night TV. I mean, it doesn't work. It's not the fastest way through the course. So important is starting well that there are some forms of motorsport that they will spend hours and hours, sometimes days, just practicing the start. So, for instance, off-road rallying. Usually, off-road rallying, particularly in the professional ranks, there will be a starter in front of them, and they'll hold three fingers up right in front of the windshield. And they'll shout it out too, but usually the engine's too loud, nobody can hear it. But they say, 3, 2, 1, and then go, and they'll take their hand, maybe a flag wave, something like that. And so important to the teams is the start that, as I say, they'll spend days perfecting this. You know, just the right angle and tire pressures and RPM, all of this stuff, just so they can start well. And you might be wondering, well, what's the big deal? I mean, the start, it's a fraction of the overall time of the race. What's the big deal about the start? And the answer is quite simple. Starting well gives you the best chance of finishing well. Because you see, racing is very often won by fractions of a second. How you start often determines how well you finish. That's why you see on my sermon graphic here a checkered flag at the beginning. Because ultimately, that's what each person is looking for, not just in racing, but in life as well. Which brings me to an interesting point. Those of us that have the honor and the privilege of serving students on this campus, and we share this campus with three schools, Griggs University, International Academy is also here with us, and those of us that have the privilege of serving students in this capacity, we have already, students, you need to know this. Students, we have already put in thousands of hours getting ready for Monday. Even before the first class, university students has come. Now, elementary school at Academy, you've already started off here. But even before your first day of class, your teachers put in hours and hours and hours of work. How come? So that you will have the best chance of finishing well. We have a vested interest, students, in seeing you finish well. We want to see you do well in your careers. We want to see you do well in your marriages. If you're going to be a mom and a dad, we want to see you prepared to do well with that. And most of all, we want to see you finish well by entering the kingdom of God. And that you might have the greatest possibility of a good ending. This morning, I want to share with you three keys to starting well. Would you turn in your Bibles, please, to Daniel chapter 1, verse 3. Daniel, the first chapter, beginning with verse 3. Little background here in the story. Most of you are probably familiar, at least somewhat, with this. The scene is this. A guy by the name of Nebuchadnezzar is the crown prince. He's not yet the king of Babylon when he invades Palestine, among other places, trashes the place, burns a whole bunch of stuff, and takes a bunch of captives back with him to Babylon. This is about 605 BC when he does this. His dad, Nabopolassar, is still on the throne, but Nabopolassar dies in 605, and so very soon Nebuchadnezzar is on the throne. And he has some captives that he wants to attend to, and that's where we join the story. Daniel chapter 1, verse 3. It says, then the king, Nebuchadnezzar, ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. Young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Now, pause there for just a moment. This is school. Daniel and his three friends are about to start school. And this is university level, right? This is top stuff that these guys are about to enter into. So could it be that we could pick up some keys of how to start well from these guys on the cusp of a new academic year for them? Let's keep reading here. Verse 6, among these were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them, now notice carefully here, gave them new names, to Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. Pause there, please. This will probably not happen to you on your first day of class, students. Okay. But in those days, this was actually fairly commonplace. Because if a conquering nation came and they took captives, most of those captives would either be killed or put into some sort of servile labor, right? But some of them, it was not unusual, and the Babylonians just kind of following suit for that time. They would take the best of the best and try to put them to work for them. And a part of that process, often a crucial part, was to change their names. Now, the reason they did this were not happy reasons. One of them was humiliation. Your former name means nothing. Only what we think of you matters. Okay. And certainly there's an element here of domination and control. We own you so much that we can name you. We can name you. You will do whatever it is that we say you will do. It was quite literally an early form of brainwashing. It was an attempt to erase past values and associations in favor of new values and associations in Babylon for Babylonian purposes. And given the fact that Israel was in ruins and that Daniel and his friends were outgunned in seemingly every conceivable way, the pressure must have seemed sky high to just put their heads down and fold their hands and go along with this new and alien way. New names and all. And then comes verse 8. But, and what's the next word? Daniel. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Not Belteshazzar, but Daniel asked for this permission. A first key to starting well is to keep your good name. Keep your good name. Now, to be clear, we know for a fact that the rulers of Babylon often referred to Daniel by his Babylonian name. That is true. But as far as Daniel and his three friends and God were concerned, Daniel was and always remained Daniel. And furthermore, in those days, much like today, your name was more than just letters on a page that people used to describe you. Your name also implied your reputation. It was who you were. To have, quote, a good name, therefore, meant far more than just having a pretty sounding title. It meant character. It meant integrity. It meant faithfulness to God. And Daniel did all he could do to keep his good name. And those of you that grew up hearing stories about Daniel, I can almost hear you saying, well, of course Daniel tried to keep his own good name because he's Daniel, right? That's just what Daniel does. Okay. Don't forget, Daniel and his three friends had options. And from a worldly perspective, they were fantastic. I mean, think about it. Daniel and his friends here are not in jail. They are not in stocks. They're not rotting in a cell somewhere in the, you know, under the, in the bowels of the city. They're not out in the field slaving away. They're not doing some sort of servile labor in a sweatshop. No, 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 no. They are instead staying at the Babylon Hilton. I mean, they have entered the princely caste now of Babylon. So they're in a nice place. They've got nice clothes, probably the nicest they've ever had, certainly the nicest that Babylon had to offer. Every restaurant in the city, even Nebuchadnezzar's own five-star grill, is open to them, and the king himself is going to pick up the tab. Are they captives? Well, yes, they are, but not in a conventional sense. In fact, in the eyes of the Babylonians, these four Hebrew freshmen are more free than ever before. And of course, by now, undoubtedly, they knew that graduates from BU, those of you who don't know your ancient Near Eastern Ivy League schools, that's short for Babylon University. Okay. Those graduates from BU, man, they had bright futures. Daniel and his friends would make a lot of money. I mean, bottom line, Babylon was king of the heap in those days. I mean, they were loaded. Gold was one of the most defining characteristics of Babylon. I mean, this stuff, it was an incredible, rich, wealthy place to be, and part of that wealth would undoubtedly have become theirs. They would live in great houses. Wine, women, and song would be the order of the day, and they would wield great authority in one of the most powerful nations that earth had ever seen up to that time. From a worldly perspective, the future is oh so very bright for these four young scholars. And all your new friends this side of graduation are asking for, Daniel, is for you to just fudge a little bit. I mean, it's just a new name, Daniel, right? It's just bacon on the king's table. I mean, you're going to go vegan over this? I mean, come on. Can't you leave some of those old-fashioned values behind? Leave behind some of your former morals and convictions. Not all, Daniel, just some of them. Leave behind at least some of your good name. Come on, Daniel. In light of all the stuff that you have a chance to gain, would it really matter that much? A story. Yea, verily, in the last millennium, when I was just starting my pastoral ministry, I was pastoring in the Pacific Northwest. I was probably, I don't know, 2 months in, 3 months in, something like that. My wife and I were not yet my wife and I. We were engaged. I was pastoring in an area, it was a large metro area, and I was following up for the first time in my pastoral career Bible study request cards. Now, many of you, I'm sure, present here have done this before. The idea is you know, mail order stuff back in those days. I think it was an It Is Written card I had. Somebody would respond to an It Is Written Bible study request. It Is Written sends it out to the area church, and the pastor or someone else goes out, knocks on the door, and says, hey, I'm here with your Bible studies. When can we start? It's interesting work. Sometimes you don't always find a Bible study. This particular evening, I was nearing the end of my list. It was probably about 7 o'clock. It was the time of year when it get pretty much dark. It was cooler. And I recognized the address as being in a large apartment complex. There were hundreds of people that lived in this apartment complex. And sometimes it's difficult to navigate in those things. I looked at the name, and the name, it was from a country. I wasn't sure I was going to pronounce this right. So, okay, when I get to the door, I've got to do the best I can, right? So I finally find the hallway that the apartment number on the card is supposed to be at. And I go down there, check the card, check the number. Okay, right place. And I knock on the door. Long pause. Finally, the door opens. And there stands a woman who is inappropriately dressed. Shouldn't come to the door like that. She says, can I help you? And I look at my card, and I think, yes, is so-and-so. And I try to stumble through the name that's there. She says, no one like that lives here. And I knew enough by now, I thought, well, okay, let's at least try a follow-up here. Well, do you know, did anybody in the household request Bible studies? And she said, no. And then she got a smile on her face that meant no good, and she said, but if you want to come in and spend some time together, that would be all right with me. And I said, no, thank you. And I turned and walked away. Now, I'm not the prophet or a son of a prophet, but I am pretty sure if I had lingered, that very soon the devil would have begun to whisper in my ear, come on, Shane. It's just one time. You know, you're a young, handsome guy. Well, at least I was back then. Okay. Who will know, right? I mean, this was at the end of a hallway, the way the apartment complex, you know, it's kind of this end there, and then two apartments kind of going off like this. Who will ever know? This is before GPS. You know, no one's tracking, right? You know, just this one time. Just fudge this once, Shane. Ladies and gentlemen, if I had stayed and listened to that whispering, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. It would have destroyed my prospects for marriage. My engagement would have been broken. It would have disrupted my family before it had even begun. And it would have ended my pastoral ministry and left a trail of pain and regret that would have lasted literally till this day. Ladies and gentlemen, and every student that is listening right now, hear it and hear it well. Evil always exacts a price. If you indulge in evil, it always exacts a price. Sooner or later, it will demand payment. The bill will come due. If you indulge in evil, there is no such thing as a freebie. And if you continue to indulge in evil, what we sow is what we will reap. And in that reaping, we will be damaged and our name and the name of God will be smeared. Now, students, good news, good news. Andrews is not Babylon. We are AU, not BU, okay? Right. And as such, you have our promise that we will do everything in our power to grow you in Jesus, to help you leave this place when you graduate from this place, that you will be a more loving, strong, moral, Christ-centered, service-minded person than you were when you started. That's our commitment to you. And at the same time, we know that particularly for our university students, being here for the first time probably means that you have more freedom to do what you want to do than ever before. Mom and dad aren't here. Whoever it was you were staying with, they're not here. You are here, right? And this freedom, it's great. Embrace it. And also remember, with freedom inevitably also comes temptation. You will be tempted as never before regarding whom you hang out with, the friends you begin to acquire, what you watch on your phone or on your laptop, how you spend Friday and Saturday nights, how you deal with the hours of the Sabbath in between, where you go, what you do, etc., etc. In all of that, the devil will whisper in your ear and tempt you to leave even the tiniest portion of your good name behind. It's going to happen. And when it does, we want you to remember that we here at Pioneer and many, many other places, we are praying for you. That when that whisper comes into your ear to compromise, you will stop, you will pray, you will ask God for help, and then you will do the right thing, and you will keep your good name. And by the way, I've been in the education side of things long enough that I'm pretty sure there's at least one person listening right now, a student that has come to Andrews, that you're not sure if this counsel is for you because you're not sure if you have a good name to preserve. Maybe you made some decisions prior to coming here that were the wrong decisions. Maybe there was trouble and difficulty and you were the cause of it and you're not sure how you move forward with this particular topic that I'm talking about right here. I want you to know something. We don't know what you did. As far as we know, you have a good name. And we are going to give you the space to keep it. Don't let your past determine your future. Jesus is bigger than that. Trust in Him. Put your hand in His. When the whispering comes your way, do something different than you did before. Ask for His strength. He will give it. That's a prayer that Jesus never turns down, by the way. You ask for help, He'll always answer yes to that. And He will give you the strength to do the right thing. And you too can keep your good name. Daniel did it. And you can too. And it's the first key to starting well. There is a second. Take a look at verse 8 again, please. Daniel 1, verse 8. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please, test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." A second key to starting well is shockingly practical. And it goes like this. Eat the right food. I know what some of you are thinking. Are you seriously going to talk about my plate, Pastor Shane? Yes, I am. I am. This is going to be fun. Follow me here. There is no doubt that one of the most prominent reasons Daniel and his friends did not want to eat the king's food is that at least a portion of that food had been dedicated to pagan idols. Okay, that's clear. I don't think there's any dispute about that. And if you ate the food, in some sense, you were showing allegiance to those foreign gods. This, obviously, no self-respecting Jew could do. The Bible, at their time, was very clear about this. Don't do that. However, it is also clear that another reason Daniel and his friends did not want to eat the king's food was because to do so would violate the laws of health that God had laid out years earlier. Notice this, a little book called Diets and Foods, page 30. It says, among the viands, a French word, I'm told French food, it simply means items of meat, so food, meat that somebody might eat. Among the viands placed before the king were swine's flesh and other meats which were declared unclean by the law of Moses and which the Hebrews had been expressly forbidden to eat. Here, Daniel was brought to a severe test. Should he adhere to the teachings of his fathers concerning meats and drinks and offend the king, probably losing not only his position but his life? Or should he disregard the commandment of the Lord and retain the favor of the king, thus securing great intellectual advantages and the most flattering worldly long prospects? Now, for many Christians, this is a very arcane conversation. I mean, this is like novel. What are you talking about? I mean, who cares about what you eat, right? But if you've hung out with Adventists for any length of time, you are familiar with this being an issue for Daniel and his friends. You see, for Adventists, for well over a century and a half, we have emphasized the importance of eating right. Not only avoiding unclean meat, but following a good diet in general. I mean, health is legitimately a big deal to us. I mean, we have large hospital systems around the world. We have hundreds of clinics around the world. And thousands of Adventists, both professional and volunteer, are regularly involved in preventative health work, a major component of which is a good and balanced diet. Avoiding the foods which God says to avoid and eating the healthy ones which He made for our consumptions. This helps to keep our physical bodies in shape. It wards off sickness, it helps us to be happier, etc., etc. And again, we have known this for a very long time, so you might be wondering, Pastor Shane, since this information is so well known in the church, why are you bringing this up as a pivotal key to starting well? Pastor Shane, after all, don't you know that Adventist students today, particularly college students, are famous for their healthy eating habits? Not sure why that's funny, but okay. Students listening right now, we're all okay. We all eat fabulously healthy diets. But I've heard there are other universities where this is not true. They actually will have students that do not eat healthfully. Can you believe that? It's astonishing, isn't it? And I know in part because I used to be one of those people. When I was in college, a balanced meal to me meant that the food did not fall off my spoon before it made it to my mouth. I lived off such staples as uncooked ramen noodles, right? Some of you may remember this. Some of you might be doing this right now. I don't know. You would take off the end and you would kind of push up the noodles there, uncooked, and you'd kind of chow away. If you were really gourmet, you would open up the seasoning packet and put a little bit of that on the uncooked ramen noodles as well. Right? I never met a vegetable that I didn't not like. Okay, and my diet was so bad when I got married 8 months after college, my wife, to her horror, discovered that most of those 8 months had been spent with me eating the two basic food groups, Wheaties and Kraft macaroni and cheese. Okay. Now, Kraft macaroni and cheese, I mean, that was cooking, man. This is gourmet stuff. I mean, you could boil water and stuff, and you put the noodles in. I think it was like 6 minutes and 40 seconds was the top. That was the perfect time for those noodles in there. And if you put just a hair more than a quarter cup of butter, oh, that stuff is so creamy. I mean, this is fabulous stuff, okay? That was my diet. But praise the Lord, my wife is both patient and one of the world's greatest cooks. And through trial and tribulation and more than a little camouflaging, she managed to slowly expand my dietary repertoire. And within a few years of marriage, I was so advanced, man, I was eating crazy exotic foods. Like broccoli. Cauliflower. Beet greens. Who knew? I mean, this horrible thing down below, but the greens on top, those are fabulous, right? I mean, if you cook them correctly, legumes of all sorts entered into my diet, except for lima beans, which remain the spawn of Satan to this day, okay? Green beans, asparagus, squash, and more. Salad bars began to tremble when I would walk into the room. And I learned that there was an entire world of flavor and health out there that was previously unknown to me. And again, some of you are wondering, but Pastor Shane, why are you telling us this? Why should I include diet of all things here at the cusp of my new academic career at Andrews? Why would you include this as a key to starting this next phase of life? Well, three reasons, very briefly. Go. Number one. According to the CDC, and excluding accidents, the top three killers in the United States remain stubbornly the same. Anybody know what they are? Heart disease, stroke, and cancer. I heard it. Heart disease, cancer, and stroke, that's the order that they actually go in. And all of these, in most cases, are strongly affected by, and in many cases can even be prevented or reversed by eating the right foods. Students, God is calling you to be healthy, keywords coming up here next, lifelong witnesses for Him. If you die early, you can't work for the Lord anymore. You can't be with Him until the second coming comes around. Your time working for Him is done. And good health habits that will preserve you start best right now during these earlier years. Now, to be clear, I like dessert and the occasional pizza as much as the next guy. One of my professors back in college used to say, life is better with ice cream. Okay. But in part because my general diet is fueled by my wife's healthy cooking, my blood pressure is normal, my cholesterol is excellent, and my blood panels are all within spec. Who but God alone knows when I will die? But in part because of my solid diet, I can pretty much guarantee you that if the second coming doesn't intervene, I will die much later than I would have if I hadn't consistently eaten the right foods. Eat right, students, that you might maximize the length and quality of your work for the Lord. Second, students, you will almost certainly do better in school if you eat right. It's not just me that says this, and it's not just an Adventist thing. 2019 Youth Risk Behavior Survey, this is the most recent one I could find on the CDC's website. They do surveys about risk behaviors for youth, and interestingly enough, they said that when compared to students with lower grades, students with higher grades are more likely to, get this list, eat breakfast on all, how many days? 7. Wow, that's strict, isn't it, right? 7 days a week. They're more likely to eat fruit or drink 100% fruit juice one or more times per day. They eat vegetables one or more times per day. And get this, not drink a can, bottle, or glass of soda or pop. And this is a secular government institution that's saying this. Now, if that research is too opaque for some of you, let me just translate what it's actually saying. What it's saying is this. In other words, research has clearly shown that the odds are that if you regularly eat the right food, your grades will be better. And if you regularly eat the wrong food, your grades will be worse. All students can benefit from knowing these facts. And particularly, if you are looking to excel in your chosen field. Now, I don't have any official stats to back this up. My impression is that we here at Andrews, we tend to attract maybe a bigger slice of that high academic performing segment of Adventism. Because you come here and you know about the great programs that we have, research opportunities, you know, internships, this kind of stuff. You come here because you want to excel. You even want to be at the top of your field, and this is a great place to do that. But if you're going to make that happen, ladies and gentlemen, diet is no joke. You need to be, if you're going to be at the top of your discipline, what you eat or don't eat will have a direct impact on your success. God made you to be a man or woman created in his image, and that includes becoming the smartest, wisest person you can be. Eat the right food, and your odds of becoming that go up. And number three, and most importantly, Adventists, and for that matter, thoughtful followers of God for thousands of years, have known that the only way you can communicate with God is right here, your brain. You know, we can employ other parts of our body to communicate with God. You know, worship, you know, raising our hands in praise, that kind of a thing. But the only way you can digest information from God, either from His Holy Spirit or from His Word or for testimonies from others, and the only way you can communicate back to God is through your brain. That's it. There are no other options. And consequently, we have learned that there is an intimate connection between our physical health and our spiritual health. If the body is in good physical health, we are more likely to more accurately hear God's voice. If the body is in poor physical health, we are less likely to accurately hear God's voice, and what we eat or don't eat has a direct impact on that ability. Now, don't misunderstand. No one will merit heaven because they ate broccoli and tree bark instead of pizza and moose tracks. But if your brain is clogged because you eat trash and you ignore the laws of health, then yes, you will be sick more often. You know, it's not a sin to be sick. It is a sin to be sicker than you need to be. If you ignore the laws of health, your life will be shorter and harder. And yes, you will not be able to hear the voice of God as clearly as you otherwise would be able to. This will make life's problems seem bigger than they actually are, because only God is equipped to help you and me handle correctly the challenges of life. Simply put, a consistently poor diet means your life will be less than both God and you dream it can be. So, that is why we must recognize that in consciously choosing to eat the right food, Daniel and his friends were onto something. As they were starting school, they knew that a good diet is a great blessing, one that God himself designed to benefit the human race. And if you want to start well too, like they did, don't neglect this most basic key. Start today and eat the right food. Which brings us to a third and final key. Daniel chapter 1, verse 13. Daniel here explaining to the steward the test. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. Verse 14, so he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. You want to start well? Then keep your good name and eat the right food. And number three, compound God's blessings. Compound God's blessings. Now, we are close enough to a university campus and a high school campus that I feel I can safely ask an accounting 101 question. You ready? What is compound interest? If you know the answer, raise your hand. All right, for the 10 of us in the room, we're going to be wealthy. We're not sure about the rest, okay? Compound interest is where you don't just earn interest on the principal amount that you put on deposit, okay? Just an example. This is a positive example of compound interest. Instead, 1 month you put $100 down there and you get some interest on it. The next month you get interest on both the principal and the interest you earned the previous period. And that continues on and grows so that you begin to earn money not like this, but like this at an increasing speed. And if you keep at it long enough, you will see an exponential curve, an exponential growth in your wealth. And you can do the same thing with spiritual blessings as well. How do I know? Because my Bible just told me so. If we look carefully at what Daniel and his three friends did, one act of obedience, just one, eating according to God's plan, led to a blessing. Good health. At the end of 10 days, they all looked healthier, ruddier, etc., like that, okay? They were obedient, and God gave a blessing. This undoubtedly then led to further opportunities to follow God's will, which when they did that successfully, opened the door for more blessings from God, which opened the door for further opportunities for obedience, which then led to further blessings, etc., which ultimately led them 3 years later to being 10 times as wise and knowledgeable as all their fellow students. Ladies and gentlemen, that is spiritual compounded interest. By their continued obedience, God was able to bless them progressively more and more until the blessings of God were fantastically compounded. Now, I don't know how you measure 10 times more, okay? Scholars sometimes argue about this particular passage. Wow, you know, how could that possibly be? You know, it must have been just like some caveman saying to say that you're really smart, you know, because these are the barbaric culture, right? No. It is true there were barbaric aspects to almost any civilization back in those days. But make no mistake, the Babylonians were at the pinnacle of culture and arts and learning in those days. These were some of the smartest people on the globe. And the king was at the top of that heap. And if he says, these guys are 10 times better, God has done some spiritual compound interest. Students and all of us, go thou and do likewise. The same God that so abundantly blessed Daniel and his three friends 2,600 years ago is alive and well and waiting to equally bless you today. Prophets and Kings, page 486, put it like this. In acquiring the wisdom of the Babylonians, Daniel and his companions were far more successful than their fellow students. But their learning did not come by chance. They obtained their knowledge by the faithful use of their powers under the guidance of the Holy Spirit. They placed themselves in connection with the source, capital S, of all wisdom, making the knowledge of God the foundation of their education. In faith, they prayed for wisdom, and get this, and they lived their prayers. They placed themselves where God could bless them. They avoided that which would weaken their powers and improved every opportunity to become intelligent in all lines of learning. They followed the rules of life that could not fail to give them strength of intellect. And the thought finishes with this. True success in any line of work is not the result of chance or accident or destiny. It is the outworking of God's providences, the reward of faith and discretion, of virtue and perseverance. Fine mental qualities and a high moral tone are not the result of accident. And get how she ends it here. God gives opportunities. Success depends upon the use made of them. Students, at the cusp of a new school year, make this your reality. aim for the highest standard. Seek to glorify God in all that you do. Follow his word consistently. Refuse to compromise. Carry out each duty as for the Lord and not for mere human beings. And he will compound his blessings to you, taking you exponentially upward in his kingdom. I can almost hear the countdown starting. 3, 2, 1. As the adventure of a new year is about to begin. And if you will keep your good name, and if you'll eat the right food, and if you compound God's blessings, you will not only start well, but you will have a glorious opportunity to see heaven's checkered flag and end well too. Welcome to Andrews, and may the Lord bless you as you glorify him in this next year.